Every May, we celebrate Jewish American Heritage Month, a time to honor the stories, the struggles, and the spirit of Jewish life in the United States. The Jewish people and Jewish culture are a part of the very heart of America. Their contributions have made our country what it is today, and one of the most cherished traditions is food. From neighborhood delis to the kitchens of grandmothers, Jewish American food is more than a meal, it's a memory. Briskets, bagels, matzah ball soup, each bite is packed with history and heart. And of course, the heart of a culture is also its music. For example, klezmer, the joyful soundtrack of a people who have brought their old world melodies to a new world stage. We talked to a band leader who is bringing a unique fusion to the sound. Fox 11 News In Depth starts right now. Hello, everyone. I'm Hal Eisner, and this is Fox 11 News In Depth. Across every corner of American life, in science and justice and in activism, Jewish Americans have helped shape the very soul of this country. To reflection on that legacy, we turn to Rabbi Steve Leder, who's a storyteller. He's a best-selling author, including this book right here, For You When I'm Gone. Rabbi Leder, welcome.
Thank you.
Good to
be with you.
Thanks so much for being here.
Of course.
Rabbi Leder with the Wilshire Temple. And you told us about a quote from George Washington. You know that quote?
I do.
Say it.
I thought you were going to share it with
me. I will, but you know it. The quote is from our father, the father of our country, George Washington.
May the children of the stock of Abraham who dwell in the land continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of other inhabitants, while everyone shall sit safely under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid.
And you know, I never knew that until today. I had never heard that before. And that was back in 1790.
Correct.
1790.
Yes.
And
do you want to know why
I'd like to know why.
Well, the backstory is there were a handful, there were only 2,000 Jews, by the way, during the Revolutionary War living in what was soon to become America. Now, one of them was a guy named Chaim Soloman. He almost single-handedly financed the American Revolution, including finding the money for Washington's 1781 battle in Yorktown, which turned the tide of the Revolutionary War in favor of the Americans. He found a way to convert French loans into usable cash for Washington's army. Without Chaim Soloman, the United States of America might very well have been a very short-lived nation.
And Jewish people in this country and having influence goes way back. There's the name of a Jewish woman on the Statue of Liberty.
Yes, Emma Lazarus, the New Colossus. So she was a volunteer in New York working with refugees coming from the race riots against Jews called pogroms in Eastern Europe. And she wrote this poem to honor them and their suffering. She wrote this idea of America being at its best when it welcomes the huddled masses yearning to be free.
What a wonderful line that is. And the Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, yes, Mr. Pulitzer was a Jew. And not only did he establish the Pulitzer Prize to reward excellence in journalism, and we know our democracy depends upon excellence in journalism, he also founded and named the Journalism School at Columbia University. So a major influence and a name we know well but don't really understand its connection to his Jewish faith.
Another name we know well is Levi Strauss.
Yes.
Blue Jeans.
But the man behind Levi Strauss, Jacob Davis, was from Lithuania. He was a tailor who came up with the idea of blue jeans and the idea of using rivets to reinforce seams. He invented the blue jean and then went to Levi Strauss to mass produce and distribute it. No Jacob Davis, no Levi's.
Wow. And what about technology?
Oh, well, I mean, it goes way back, but let's leap forward now. Sergey Brin, Google, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook and Meta, literally changing the world, I think to an even greater degree than Thomas Edison changed the world with the light bulb. Both Jews. One of them, Sergey Brin, an immigrant from the former Soviet Union.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the first Jewish justice on the Supreme
Court. No, the first Jewish woman.
I'm sorry, first Jewish woman. The first was actually Brandeis.
Brandeis, Arthur Goldberg, there have been several.
Right. But you know, we talk about people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the influence and impact that she's had and her famous dissents in the court.
Yes, and also her ability to reach across the aisle. And she had, in a sense, when she started out graduating from law school, two strikes against her. She was a woman and a Jew. And that was a time in our history when those were barriers to success. She burst through them all.
Bagels.
Harry Lender. So people, bagels used to exist primarily in Montreal and New York. That was it. The man who popularized the bagel, who introduced the larger world to the bagel, Harry Lender. He came up with the idea of mass producing them instead of hand rolling them. He came up with the idea of pre-slicing them, putting them in polyurethane bags, freezing them, enabling them to be distributed throughout grocery stores all over America. Harry Lender is the reason most people who did not grow up in New York or Montreal know anything
You're telling me a lot of things I didn't know. Eddie Jacobson.
Here's a great example of how friendship makes a difference. Eddie Jacobson was buddies with a young guy named Harry Truman in Kansas City, Missouri. They went into business together, and then they were reunited, by the way, in the Army. They were both conscripted at the same time and went to basic training together, and then after that went into business together, and they remained friends always.
We have less than a minute.
He is the one who told Truman it was important to meet with the president of Israel, Chaim Weizmann, and to recognize the birth of the nation of Israel. And that happened on May 14th, 1948.
How significant. How incredibly significant.
Changed the world.
Why is it important to have a Jewish American Heritage Month?
Well, Jewish values and American values are well aligned. Standing up for the oppressed, the importance of religious freedom and expression, the importance of separation of church and state. And so Jews have been incredibly good for America, and America has been incredibly good for Jews. Now, I'll leave you with one final fact, Hal.
Do you know
that three American Jews invented air conditioning and automobiles?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, that's why when you look on your dashboard, it says, Hi, Max and Norm.
Oh, boy. Right. I hear you. Okay. Thanks, Rabbi,
for
being with us. Coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth, what's a more important representative of a people than their cuisine? It's certainly top of the list. We'll take a look at one of the icons of Jewish food here in Los Angeles and talk about the significance of Jewish favorites coming up right after this break. Don't go away. Welcome back to Fox 11 News in Depth. I'm Hal Eisner, and for Jews and non-Jews alike, the deli is a temple to worship Jewish food culture, well, sort of. And the co-owner of a beloved L.A. deli is here to tell us all about it. Joining me now, Mark Cantor, the co-owner of Cantor's Deli. And Mark, good to see you. Thanks for joining us. Cantor's has been around a long time.
Yeah, since 1924. My grandfather was involved in 1948, 1931, they moved to Los Angeles, 1948 on Fairfax. And I'm third generation, my kids are involved. So we've been doing this for about 100 years.
So you're pretty much an expert on this. And so let us know exactly why deli food is sort of the food that represents Jewish communities.
Well, it's also comfort food. And a lot of people, when they experience for the first time, they're in awe. They can't believe how comforting and good it is. A good bowl of matzo ball soup, you know, a corned beef Reuben, stuffed cabbage, potato pancakes. It's just really good food. And there's a lot of nuance into it. So that's why a lot of people don't do it. You have to be born in it. I think it's got to be in your blood.
And I guess in your blood from grandma. And the grandma before that, and the grandma before that. I remember mine making honey cake and kugel, which is kind of a potato dish, latkes, blintzes, all those sort of things. And that's sort of what we think of sometimes when we're thinking about the foods in our past in the Jewish community. So let me sort of ask you this. Do you think deli food, like at Cantor's, tastes like grandma's?
I do. It's basically Eastern European recipes from that they knew, and my grandparents came here with, they knew how to do that stuff. They learned it from their parents or grandparents. And to make a living, they were selling knishes or pickles off a cart until they can get enough money and then open a small restaurant. And then from there, they learned how to pickle the meats. And you know, it was a limited menu. And then from there, we grew into a, also some diner items, you know, burger, cheeseburger, those kinds of things. But and the main thing that we do is the deli items.
This is probably a good opportunity to ask you to explain the difference between kosher and non-kosher food.
Well, kosher is actually rabbi supervised from the start and the whole process. And also what another thing that the difference between kosher and non-kosher is if you're mixing the milk or cheese with meats, you can't do that. So you can't have a Reuben, which has Swiss cheese on it, melted Swiss cheese and meat at the same time. Right away, you're no matter what, even if you had kosher meat, you can't do that. So there's a lot of laws that come into effect on that. And a lot of people say, are you kosher? And we say, well, it's kosher style. It's not actually kosher. You know, we don't use lard in our bakery products, but it's not supervised either.
There are kosher restaurants around.
Sure, sure. There's kosher restaurants, but they're milk or meat. They don't do both.
Well, when we think about places like Cantor's, it's also sort of like a community center. People hang out there. They talk.
A lot of people, when they find out my family's from Cantor's, they tell me that's where they met their spouse. And when I did some research, I mean, I've heard this over 200 or 300 different times. And it turns out, for the most part, it's because they picked Cantor's as a location to meet for the first time. But in some cases, they actually met at Cantor's.
Oh. So sort of anecdotally.
Right. It's a good neutral place to... The menu's pretty diverse. There's something for everybody. And it's very comforting. And it's... A lot of people grew up Cantor's, but Cantor's is also treated like Disneyland. But people, relatives come here or friends come from out of town, the first thing they do is take them to Cantor's to have that
experience.
What is
the popularity, though, of delis? I mean, is it declining? Is it increasing? Or is it just staying flat?
I think it's declining because the food cost is higher than restaurants, and the labor is higher. And also, there's a lot of nuances. You have to be there. You can't just, you know, tell them what to do and go home. You have to be there. You have to, otherwise it falls apart.
So when we talk about the deli, oftentimes what I've seen are waitresses that have been there a long time and guys behind the counter that are cutting the meats that have been there a long time. How important is that?
We have one guy that's been there since 1964 behind the deli.
Wow.
George K. He's still there. He's there today. So yeah, it's important to have probably, you know, we have 135 employees. I'd say more than half of them have been there more than 25 years.
Why is the culture of food so important?
I don't know. I think it's just you want something that grandma made, and your grandma might not be around anymore, and you kind of miss that, and so you'll go to a place that you can sort of duplicate that.
And then you go and you go again, and then you go again.
Right. A matzo ball soup is made from hand. There's a stuffed cabbage takes 6 hours to make. Restaurants aren't just going to do that. It's not profitable. We do it because it's the way we were taught, and it's what some people expect. And it's good. It's actually very good, but it's hard to find.
You know, we have less than a minute right now, but let me ask you, what is the importance to you of a Jewish American Heritage Month?
I guess it's just important because if we don't keep it up, it gets lost and you know, it will just be gone.
So it's keeping a spotlight on it.
Yeah, keeping it going. It's in our blood. I mean, I've been doing it for about 43 years now. My dad put in 60 years. His dad put in 50 years. So in my family, it's been there. And, you know, it's just until I'm gone, I will do this. I will keep it going as long as I can.
Because?
Because it's important. It's important to the community. It's important. It's the right thing to do. It's what my grandparents would have wanted, what my father would have wanted. And we also are, the employees that work for us are like family. So we're all kind of one big family.
Got it. Mark Cantor, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate it. Stay right there for a moment. And coming up next on Fox 11 News in Depth. What exactly is klezmer music? Why is it associated with Jewish heritage? And what does it have to do with the tango? We introduce you to the innovative leader of the Klezmer Juice Band to help answer those questions. That's coming up. Don't go away. Another hallmark of Jewish culture comes from music. There's a particular musical sound you're probably aware of, or even if you didn't know the name of it. If you've ever been to a Jewish wedding or a bar mitzvah, you're probably familiar with klezmer music. Here to tell us more about this piece of Jewish culture is klezmer Jews band leader and clarinet player Gustavo Bulgach. And your band is pretty well known in many circles. Here's a clip, by the way, of you guys in the movie The Wedding Crashers. I just want to jump out there and start singing. That's you and your band playing right there. Why is this music so important to the culture of Jewish people?
I believe it's the arrowhead of culture. We cut through all layers of society, and the truth is, if you like Jewish music, if you dance to this music, if you can sing the Havana Gila, can you hate Jewish people? Most likely you won't.
Well, I want to understand this a little bit better. I know a little bit about klezmer music, but is it kind of like a folk music?
It started as folk music, yes. It can be divided into many things. What we know about klezmer music today is like an umbrella. I'm going to make a little comparison so you and your audience can understand this. Salsa music or Latin music. We like dancing salsa. So when we start going to the salsa club, we realize salsa doesn't exist. It's mambo, merengue, cha-cha-cha, bolero. Klezmer music, same thing. It's an umbrella to Ashkenazi and Sephardic music and Mizrahi music, which is Israeli music now. So it's like the name of the generic name for Jewish music, but inside there's so much more than just one style.
Well, so what are some of the characteristics of it?
Fun, joy, playing for others, and celebration. You know, God speaks through the music.
How did you get involved?
I just can't resist. It's an amazing energy that flows.
How old were you when you started playing?
I don't remember. Very young.
Little kid?
Very young, a kid, yeah.
But did you start learning this kind of music?
Well, my grandfather in Argentina was the president of a congregation that had the shul, the synagogue, and everything, and the klezmer band that played from Friday night to Sunday night. So my dad wanted to, you know, do his weekend stuff, so he would drop us off, and I fell in love, like my people in my age fell in love with the Beatles, I fell in love with the klezmer band.
You came from Argentina?
Yes.
And was that an influence for you down there?
Very much, yes.
In what way?
Many ways, because it was a big challenge, and it also, it gave me the skills to play any other kind of music.
And you add a little bit of tango to it.
Yes, of course.
Tell me about that.
Oh, I love it. I love tango. I'm from Buenos Aires. We grew up with tango on the radios, on the buses, everywhere. So tango flows in me. Astor Piazzolla's beat is based on the klezmer beat, which is the 3-3-2. So it's always very interconnected.
You know, as this music goes from generation to generation, does it lose a little bit of its popularity?
It does, but it's being always rescued by the youth. Always the youth fall in love and push it forward. Not only the music, but Yiddish language as well.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, you hear a lot of Yiddish language these days because that came from the grandparents mm-hmm. who came over to this country and they spoke that way to each other and then started to learn English. And we all started generation by generation to speak to each other in English.
Yeah.
And so that idea of handing down generation to generation the Yiddish language, which is kind of a combination, what, Jewish and German?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's your thought on that?
Well, I believe that Yiddish is an amazing language because it can hold so much into such a little word, like the difference, for example, between a mindset and a tzures, right? A mindset is just a problem. But if it kills you, it's a tzures.
Tzures, right. sometimes you'll hear people go, oh, such tzures I've got, right? And that's what you're talking about. But it is a quaint sound. And you know, when we talk about something that's been around for a very long time. You're still adding a bit of a modern flair to it.
Of course, one foot on tradition and the other on the now.
Is that the formula?
It's for me. It's for me. I'm sitting right here in the present with one foot on in the past and the other in the future.
And where do you see this music going in the future?
Oh, the future is bright. It's super.
I like the positive approach.
The future is bright. Come on. Yeah. There's nothing better than a wedding or a bar mitzvah. People are so happy.
The cup is half full.
It covers everything. You know, you bring to them the joy they deserve, and they bring it back to you, period.
Where can people see Klezmer Jews?
Everywhere.
Are you playing somewhere?
We're playing everywhere. We're playing events. Last week we played, you know, this week is, of course, Jewish American Heritage Month. So we played for the Santa Monica Main Library last weekend. Beautiful. A lot of people came, over 250 people. We're playing parks. This summer we're going to play a lot out. And we're playing all year round. We are from here, from California.
And who's in the band with you?
Well, that's the good thing. Now, klezmer music is being played by a lot of people who are not Jewish. My drummer is Japanese. My guitar player is Freddy Ramos, a Latino guy from Uruguay. The keyboard player is Andrew Markham from San Diego. The trombone player, Dan Weinstein, who is a klezmorim from third generation in California.
Boy, talk about an eclectic bunch of people.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, is this sort of classical in a way?
It is. It will become. But my quest is try to introduce klezmer to the music program in schools. So schools once didn't play big band music, now it's included.
Right.
They never play blues, now it's included. I want to push to see if folk music in general, in klezmer music in particular, can get into the schools.
Well, I mean, music education is sometimes everything. And sometimes when you're talking about things that people really don't understand that well, because they're young and it's not in their homes and they don't hear it on the radio, sometimes you need a little music education, right? All right, very good. Gustavo, thanks for joining us. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Bob. Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Fox 11 News in depth right after this break. And finally, if you want to hear an audio version of this program, check out my podcast. It's called What the Hal, and it's available wherever you subscribe to podcasts, or just go to whatthehalpodcast.com. That's it for this week's Fox 11 News in Depth. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time. And as we leave, let's have a little of that klezmer juice.